Performance and high arousal. Just because players have a tendency to be over-aroused doesn't mean they can't play well. It's a matter of diagnosing nervous system style, then teaching strategies to control arousal for improved performance. Remember, all peak performers report the same internal state when they perform their best. They don't all use the same strategies to get to that state. Some need to increase arousal to get more focused, while some need to quiet their nervous system to reduce arousal. PGA and Australian Tours player Patrick Burke is a good example of the over-aroused player. According to Patrick, the majority of the tour players fit his nervous system style. Patrick has one of the nicest golf swings I have ever seen. I've heard other PGA Tour players and television analysts make similar comments. Swinging and playing are two different things. Patrick and I have spent a good bit of time working on strategies for him to think and move that would quiet his nervous system while remaining mentally focused. Both the under-aroused and highly aroused personality styles are part of the nervous system's anatomical neuronal network and neurochemical makeup. Therefore, to change your nervous system's programmed responses, you will need to practice the prescribed daily changes over several weeks and in a variety of low to high stress conditions. Repeated exposure to a variety of situations is necessary before learning encodes anatomically and neurochemically. This encoding process evolves as behavior occurs across many levels of low and high arousal situations. These experiences will bring gradual success in arousal management and performance. It's like climbing a ladder, one rung at a time. Johnny Miller describes this process as follows. Everyone has his own choking level, a level at which he fails to play his normal golf. As you get more experienced, your choking level rises. You will experience changes in your performance dependent upon the conditions in which you play. Your level of arousal will change from a casual round to a tournament round to playing partners. For example, how would playing with an LPGA or PGA Tour player affect your arousal levels? Rookie Tour players tend to struggle to make the cut and experience arousal. Once they have a little success, their first major is the cue for arousal. The final rung, for those who make it that far, is qualifying for and playing as a member of the Ryder Cup team. PGA Tour player Steve Pate needed a top 10 finish in the 1991 PGA Championship at Crooked Stick to qualify for the Ryder Cup team. Pate needed a par on the last hole to finish in the top 10. He made the par and the team. Mark Wiebe described the conversation he had with Pate after that round. "I was so happy for him because we hung out together. He," meaning Pate, said, "man, I was choking my butt off. It wasn't because it was the PGA Championship. It could have been Hattiesburg." Now, Hattiesburg's a PGA Tour event that was formerly played the same week as the Masters. "It's because the Ryder Cup is just about the ultimate in golf." European and PGA Tour player David Faraday says, "Everyone who has success has choked. Absolutely everyone has done it." He further states, "It's not what happens to you that matters in the long run. It's your attitude. That's what determines how you cope with the next experience that comes along. Quite often, it's how you deal with failure that determines how you achieve success. The mental process is like building a muscle. It's not letting your whole framework of thinking fall down around you. It's having the resolve and mental toughness to take it on the chin, keep your head up, and feel good about yourself for having done that. You can either feel bad because you failed or good because of your positive reactions to it. That will give you the armor to cope with it the next time." Arousal reduction for improved performance. As already noted, during a physically aroused state, your brain increases the sensory information it processes in the event of crisis. This overload blocks the ability to focus for any period on a singular event. Nervous system activities, like visualization, are hard to capture during an aroused state. To overcome this aroused state, apply the relaxation techniques you are going to learn. Your concentration will improve. You will feel more relaxed, confident, and in control. Producing a state of relaxation assists in quieting the sensory overload to the brain and sets the stage for selective information processing for a focus in the present. On the golf course, this is a one-shot-at-a-time focus. There is no consideration of score, what others are thinking, the hazards of the course, home, work, or anything else other than the shot at hand and your target. Eastern practitioners of meditation call this present focus mindfulness. Have you ever stood behind your ball on the putting green, reading a putt, trying to find the line or path your ball is going to take to the hole, or attempting to get a sense of the feeling of the stroke without success? The next time this happens, begin breathing deeply, step away from the ball, quiet your movement, resume your routine, and become mindful as you continue breathing deeply. You will find that this strategy will clear your focus, increase your ability to visualize, and relax you. Have you ever stood over a putt, distracted, and suddenly realized where you are as you are ready to make your stroke? You find yourself wondering where the line is because you lost your concentration, and you were just going through the motions behind the ball? The difference between the tour player and the amateur in this situation is that the tour player describes stepping away from the ball as he gathers his concentration and reads the putt again. The amateur says, "I just go ahead and stroke it and hope it gets close." I'm sure you can relate to this in the full swing as well. The correction of this is obvious. Step off the ball, become mindful, and start your routine over. Arousal reduction strategies. Some sports psychologists refer to low arousal training as a band-aid approach. I agree if the singular goal is to teach someone to quiet his nervous system without consideration of focused concentration, visualization, movement, confidence, routine, and a plan for management of emotions as well. I have presented 9 strategies for arousal reduction on the following, and I have provided the mechanism and rationale for each. These strategies are: number 1, breathing; number 2, movement; number 3, focused thought or mindfulness; number 4, visualization; number 5, routine; number 6, stretching; number 7, posture; number 8, biofeedback; number 9, confidence. Now let's start with breathing. Our breathing style and frequency directly affect our performance and quality of life. A relaxed person breathes deeply and slowly. A person who is tense, anxious, and aroused breathes in a rapid, shallow fashion, or he has periods of breath holding. PGA Tour player and former U.S. Open champion Curtis Strange says, "Under pressure, one of the things most important I have to remember to do is breathe." Tour players who use deep breathing during pressure situations include Tom Watson, Paul Azinger, Mike Reed, Helen Alfredson, Johnny Miller, Dennis Paulson, Patrick Burke, Jan Stevenson, Marta Figueres Doty, Jennifer Wyatt, Lori Rinker, Anne-Marie Polly, and the list goes on. Some players like Fuzzy Zeller and Jerry Hurd are well known for whistling during a round. Have you ever tried to whistle without taking a deep breath? Whistling perpetuates deep breathing and thus helps sustain relaxation. Let's look at why breathing produces relaxation. The physiological events that make up the arousal state occur as a chain, as all internal and external behaviors do. You can learn to quiet this chain of arousal by controlling one of the links, and that link is breathing. Learning deep, diaphragmatic breathing is essential to relaxation and improved performance. This breathing instruction is provided in an audio tape from the Mind Under Par series, Routine, Guided Practice in Developing Consistent Performance. If you alter or remove a link in any chain, the rest of the chain changes in some way. When you experience arousal and the associated signs of increases in heart rate, blood pressure, and so on, diaphragmatic breathing will quiet these and the other links in the arousal chain. When you use this deep breathing procedure, it is important to remember that your exhalation should last twice as long as your inhalation. Place one hand on your chest and one hand on your stomach. Now take a deep breath. What expanded most, your stomach or your chest? Your stomach will expand most with proper deep breathing. The abdominal contents push downward on the diaphragm, causing the stomach to expand. Chest expansion alone with breathing points to shallow breathing. As you exhale, find areas of tension throughout your body and relax them. Start with your forehead and scan your body and your mind looking for tension. Scan from your forehead to neck, shoulders, chest, back, arms, buttocks, legs, and feet. This procedure is called a body scan. Scan your body for tension and relax through deep breathing during any work, play, or social activity. As you use these breathing and body scan procedures, your nervous system will calm, and you will be able to maintain clear mental images of targets and produce greater total body relaxation. The physical changes associated with acceleration of your nervous system reverse when you practice relaxation strategies like diaphragmatic breathing. Blood flow resumes in the periphery, your hands warm, muscles relax, breathing returns to a normal rate, digestion resumes, and so on. However, unless thinking remains calm, confident, and positive, the arousal state of the accelerated nervous system will return, resulting in a resumption of the physical signs of fight or flight. Strategies for restructuring intrusive thoughts and staying focused in the present appear in later chapters. How can you tell if you are relaxed or aroused? Once you get used to an aroused state, it becomes your reference for relaxation. You can determine just how aroused you are by counting your breaths for a 30-second period. One full breath, and that is inhalation and exhalation, is a count of one. Try not to alter your breathing rate or the quality of your breathing as you count. A relaxed breath count is 3 to 5 in a 30-second period. Anything above 5 suggests an aroused nervous system. If you are aroused, your breath count will be high. The greater the level of your arousal, the higher your breath count will be. If you are going to impact upon your level of arousal, you will need to practice deep diaphragmatic breathing and body scans 60 to 70 times per day. Every time you hear a phone ring, walk through doorways, apply the brakes in your car, take a deep diaphragmatic breath. Use deep diaphragmatic breathing in your practice and play. As you walk between shots, when you walk on and off greens, when you mark your ball, when you are behind the ball as part of your pre-swing routine, just before you stroke your putt, as you walk on and off the tee, and when you pull a club from your bag, take a deep diaphragmatic breath. Take a deep breath and hold it. Notice the tension in your chest, shoulders, and neck. Can you imagine trying to putt or swing a club while holding your breath? Many players unknowingly do. For putting, you should be starting your stroke as you complete your exhalation. Your shoulders drop with relaxation as you exhale. In your full swing, you should be approaching the end of exhalation of a deep diaphragmatic breath as you begin to move the club away in your backswing. You should feel a relaxed heaviness in your upper body as you do. If, however, you focus on your breathing during a putting stroke or swing, poor performance will follow. Thoughts of breathing or related mental strategies are as bad as a mechanics focus during your swing. Just think of the mental strategies as mental mechanics. As noted, you need to practice these skills off the course and on the range until they become automatic and occur in all settings without conscious thought. Breath holding is common in conditions such as high winds and extreme tension. Try breathing as you hold your head out the window of a car going 30 miles per hour. Your breathing will be shallow, or you will hold your breath. Breath holding reduces the supply of oxygen to muscles, causing increased tension and quickness in movement. The first place the quickness will likely show up is in your putting stroke, then the full swing. Tour players will tell you that playing in the wind will result in a shorter, faster swing. When playing in the wind, turn your back to the breeze, breathe deeply, and stay relaxed. PGA Tour player Dennis Paulson experienced this breath-holding phenomenon while playing in 30 to 40 mile per hour winds at the 1994 AT&T at Pebble Beach. He had ingrained a deep breath in his routine. This was especially important in his putting. In the high winds at Pebble Beach on Saturday, he began to unknowingly hold his breath. He struggled with his putting the entire round. After the round, he corrected his breathing and on Sunday began to putt with deep breathing and relaxation. And once again, he began to roll the ball well on the greens. As I noted, the audio tapes and the Mind Under Par series, routine, guided practice in developing consistent performance, provide instruction in various relaxation and focus strategies, including pre-play and on-course strategies. There are a number of other strategies you can do with breathing that will quiet arousal and promote improved performance. Diaphragmatic breathing is one of the oldest used in both clinical and performance conditions. Slowing down your movement while focusing on the activity you are doing is another one of these strategies. Movement. Advice to a tour player. Quiet your movement. In June of 1974, the U.S. Open was at Wingfoot Country Club in New York. Tom Watson was leading after three rounds. On Sunday in the final round, he shot a 79. Byron Nelson, in analyzing Watson's Sunday performance, told him his swing was too fast and jerky, indicating that's why his performance deteriorated, and he shot the high score. I'm sure you can imagine what the level of arousal must be for a PGA player who is leading a major after three rounds, looking for his first tournament win as Watson was, while still trying to remain focused and relaxed. Byron Nelson went on to explain that he felt Watson had one fault. He was too smart and his mind was too active. Tom Watson does everything quickly. Nelson continued that, due to this quickness in his off-course personality, he would always swing fast. He needed to learn to control the increased quickness produced by the arousal of competition, especially under pressure. To help him slow down his swing, Byron Nelson taught Watson to move more deliberately as he set up to his shots, by shuffling his feet into his stance at a slower speed and feeling the slow waggle of the club before his takeaway, he ingrained a more fluid feeling into his swing. Tom Watson said the most important lesson he learned from Byron Nelson was tempo. Watson says, "My rhythm is better now than it ever has been. I've learned that rhythm is the basic factor why people play well or badly. Under pressure, your rhythm gets faster. It is hard not to swing a little bit faster or think a little bit faster when you are under pressure." How many tournaments are won on the last nine holes where the leader is overtaken? I would suggest that a good percentage of these wins result from the leader losing a moment-to-moment, one-stroke-at-a-time focus, and quickened swing pace and movement as he comes down the stretch due to arousal produced by the thoughts of score or position. Your golf game is no different. If you know how you and top athletes feel and behave when experience peak performance, you can strive to facilitate this state. You can correct a high arousal state by practicing the relaxation and concentration strategies you will learn in this book. The faster paced swing produced under pressure is usually self-diagnosed as a swing flaw. Faster than your ideal tempo will produce swing flaws. That is not to suggest, however, that all swing flaws result from poor tempo. Jack Nicklaus says, "The more you hurry in golf, the worse you will probably play," which leads to even heavier pressure and greater tension. The other side of this discussion is Nick Price, who is known to have a fast swing. Price says, "Being really slow under pressure can be just as bad as being really quick. Just don't go against what you normally do. The key is to recognize that pressure results in quickened movement and tempo. That's a difficult thing to feel during play. A feeling of slowing down will bring you back to your best performance zone. Some of you naturally swing too quickly. Slow down for improved performance." Jack Nicklaus notes that first tee nerves have the potential to ruin an entire round, especially if these nerves spill into the first swing and you play the first hole poorly. He doesn't describe it as such, but Nicklaus recognizes that an aroused nervous system produces a faster tempo. His strategy is to see the swing he is about to make on the first tee in his mind's eye, almost as if it's happening in slow motion, with no effort to force the shot in any way. He further notes that this strategy will often produce the best drive of the round. Some tour players have intuitively developed their own relaxation strategies, while others have incorporated deliberate movement into their routines. Ray Floyd describes his periods of peak performance. I feel like I'm going half speed. I'm not hitting the ground very hard when I walk. I'm aware there are people around, but I don't see them. I might talk to a player I'm walking with, but I don't know it. I'm alone and at ease. Tom Weisskopf described a similar feeling of slow motion when he won the U.S. Senior Open in July 1995. Sam Snead described removing all the tension from his body, making his first swing with that tension removed, and then trying to keep that up for 18 holes. When Jack Nicklaus wants to hit it long, he says he builds up to it while walking from the last green to the tee. His primary objective is to get good and relaxed. Then, once he is loose, he hits before any muscular or mental tension evolves. Nicklaus also says that starting the club back too quickly is a common fault, especially under pressure. Again, he says he gains a visual image of shoulders, arms, hands, shaft, and club head moving back together in one piece with a picture of slow movement. John Jacobs, a well-known teacher and former European Tour player, describes preparing for a tournament day. Upon arriving at the course, he took 10 minutes to put his shoes on. Johnny Miller says he would often take up to 20 minutes to shave on Sunday, the morning of the first round of a tournament. Gary Player prepared for the 1965 U.S. Open by slowing down his pace in life weeks before the event. Shaving and dining became prolonged rituals. Additionally, Player says he saw his name next to the number one spot every time he passed the leaderboard the week of the Open. Davis Love III and Byron Nelson described slowing down movement as pressure increased during play. Love said he would walk slower, play slower, and swing slower. John Jacobs, Johnny Miller, Jack Nicklaus, Gary Player, Byron Nelson, and Davis Love III intuitively quiet their nervous system by slowing down movement. Ray Floyd noticed that his times of peak performance were associated with a feeling of moving at half speed. As discussed, you will recognize that slowing down your movement will give you a feeling of control. When your nervous system is aroused, your physical movement quickens and your mental focus goes to the future. There is also a feeling of loss of control that builds with increased arousal. Hit it long by quieting your movement. PGA Tour player Mark Calcavecchia's advice to hit it long is to slow down the club going back. Low and slow is common advice from tour players as a pre-swing thought. Calcavecchia notes that amateurs tend to move the club away too quickly. Again, we visit tempo. Tom Weisskopf describes slowing the pace of a swing to counter anxiety. Pressure speeds you up. I tell myself to swing a little bit slower and let the anxiety pick up the pace of my swing. Remember, everybody gets a little nervous, so when you have that feeling or sensation, swing a little bit easier. When the club moves quickly away from a dress in the backswing, the player tends to lift the club rather than turn his body. Often there is also a regripping that, when paired with lifting, increases tension. This increased tempo and tension produce a rushed transition from the backswing to downswing, resulting in an errant shot. Simply stated, start the club back from a dress with a smooth, even tempo. Practice on the range with a feeling that your grip pressure never changes in the swing, and that your downswing is at the same speed as your backswing. In reality, neither of these is the case. Notice how much more in balance you feel with these drills. Applying movement and breathing in a pressurized situation. PGA Tour player Patrick Burke finished in the top 10 of the 1992 and 1994 PGA Tour qualifying schools. To qualify for the PGA Tour, you have to complete three stages. The first two stages have anywhere from 90 to 120 players attempting to qualify at each site. About one-third of the players in each of the first two stages qualify to move to the next stage. If you don't finish in the top one-third of any stage, you don't advance to the next stage. The first two stages consist of four rounds each, and the last stage is six rounds. Imagine, You're 30 years old and your life's goal is to play the PGA Tour. To do so, you need to play 14 consecutive rounds of golf, the majority of which must be subpar rounds. On top of that, you must pay a $3,000 entry fee. Johnny Miller describes the stress level of the PGA Tour qualifying school. As pressurized atmospheres go, the qualifying school ranks with the U.S. Open and the Ryder Cup. Patrick's primary goal at the 1992 Tour School was to stay away from mechanics and slow down his movement. He not only slowed down his movement during the various rounds, but also he began to slow down his movement as soon as his eyes opened in the morning and he rolled over to get out of bed. He continued to quiet his movement and stay focused in the present as he got ready to leave for the course and in preparation for play. He admits that the arousal got to him a bit the morning of the last round of Tour School. He realized he had already had his shoes on when he remembered he was to have taken 5 minutes to do so. He simply stepped back into his slow, deliberate routine as he hit balls and putted. He shot a 68 the last day with one out of bounds and one unplayable lie. Most importantly, he reported that the out of bounds and unplayable lie didn't faze him. Patrick describes using the same breathing and movement strategies on his way to winning the 1994 Tournament Players Championship on the Australian Tour. He noted that his anxiety was high, especially the last two rounds. He led the tournament from the second through fourth rounds and won by a shot. Tour players will also tell you that overtaking the leader in the final round is much less pressure than holding a lead over three or four rounds. As noted by Byron Nelson, your faster-paced individuals off the course will speed up under pressure on the course. It is only natural. I'm not suggesting that all players should swing with the same tempo. I am suggesting that each of you should have the same tempo in every swing and that you should employ specific strategies to keep a consistent tempo. It isn't necessarily that players swing too fast. It's just that increased arousal increases their swing pace, no matter how fast they normally swing. This quickened swing pace often results in a separation of arms and body, and this produces an errant shot. Remember, if you move quickly off the course, you will move quickly on the course. If you are going to learn to quiet your nervous system, it requires off-course movement, breathing, and focused concentration practice. Focused thought, be mindful. After winning the 1992 Kanapali Classic in Hawaii, Tommy Aaron said, "It feels great to win. I was so wrapped up in playing each shot that it hasn't sunk in." July 11, 1993, Nancy Lopez recorded her 47th win at the Youngstown Warren LPGA Classic. Lopez played a 3-iron, 198 yards to the green that came to a stop 25 feet from the cup on the par 5 18th hole. She rolled in the putt for an eagle to tie Deb Richard and won on the first playoff hole with a birdie. Lopez and her caddy had talked before the final round about the importance of her staying calm. This is something she had not done well when she got in contention earlier in 1993. "I told my caddy that I had to be patient today. I knew I was hitting the ball well, but in the past I've been putting too much pressure on myself in the last round." Why do you have problems concentrating on one shot at a time on the golf course? Why is it that your mental focus is on your last shot, score, or getting it back on the backside? That's simply because this focus on things other than what you are doing is a well-practiced habit off the course. When you took a shower this morning, what did you think about? Did you think about the water as it hit your body or the texture of your washcloth? As you left your home, did you feel the front doorknob in your hand or see the colors in the trees, the grass, or flowers? As you drove in your car, did you notice what the steering wheel felt like? Most of us have a constant future focus of concentration. When we take a shower, leave home, or drive, mentally we are someplace else. This focus can produce a constant state of arousal. As I said earlier, peak performers describe a 100% mentally present focus of concentration. How can you expect yourself to be 100% mentally present on the golf course if you are seldom 100% mentally present off the course? When your thoughts go to score, what others are going to think if you don't do well, or if you begin to think about something off the course, It's because it is a well-practiced habit pattern off the course. Practitioners of Eastern meditation techniques call a 100% concentrated focus in the present mindfulness. You will find increased control and improved performance in both your life and golf game if you will only learn to channel your attention 100% into the present while practicing slowed, deliberate movement, diaphragmatic breathing, and self-supporting conversations with yourself. The practice of mindfulness began with Buddhists 2,500 years ago. In addition to being 100% mentally present, mindfulness calls for an eavesdropping on your thinking with a dispassionate response to intruding thoughts. Assume a non-emotional indifference to the content of your thinking while you observe the themes of your thoughts. This will give you insight into the themes of thoughts that drive your moods and nervous system. As events occur, listen to your thinking and be dispassionate. You simply practice accepting things, void of any emotion. Then, after a brief period of listening to your thoughts, remind yourself to return your thinking to a 100% present focus. Experience the physical feelings, the colors, the sounds, and smells of your surroundings. Be 100% mentally in the present. Narrate your behavior. Describe the intent of every move you make and the sensations associated with each movement. Do this with everything from eating, bathing, and dressing to opening doors, driving, and answering the telephone. Notice the sensations of peacefulness, calm, and relaxation that come with this exercise. Start your day with mindfulness and plan to build it into your day-to-day life and routines off the course. When you feel a need to rush, don't. When you experience an internal feeling of urgency, remind yourself to slow down, breathe deeply, and be mindful. Once you become proficient at mindfulness off the course, you can apply these same strategies on the course. Be dispassionate in response to your performance. Without emotionally responding, accept the outcome of each swing, the conditions of the course, and situations that arise with other players. Remain mindful and calm. Practice deep diaphragmatic breathing and supportive, reinforcing dialogue. While Patrick Burke was quieting his off-course pace during tour school, he focused his thoughts in the present. He focused his thoughts on every move he made. He felt the floor under his feet and he heard the air conditioning as he moved to the bathroom and then slowly to the shower. He refocused his attention and concentration on the water as it hit his body. He felt the faucet knobs in his hand and he experienced the sensation of the soap as he washed. His thoughts were 100% in the present. Deliberate movement and mindfulness are strategies you can use in times of distress as a thought restructuring procedure or as a lifestyle you incorporate into your day from the time you open your eyes in the morning until you close them at night. Let's assume you have left your office upset over some event. You find yourself holding tension in your arms and shoulders. You have a stranglehold on the steering wheel. Practice a non-emotional, dispassionate response to the upsetting event. Accept the situation fully and consume it before it consumes you. Quieting your movement and focusing your thoughts in the present will bring you into the moment and quiet your nervous system. If some action is necessary, for example, a meeting or a phone call, schedule it. Then return to your mindful focus. Feel the relaxation move from your forehead to your feet like a wave. Notice the sounds and smells in other cars as your hands relax gently around the steering wheel. While using mindfulness, you will have a feeling of control in the slowed movement and a demonstrable positive change in your mood as you begin to disrupt the chain of distressful thinking through a dispassionate, non-emotional, accepting response. Mechanically slowing down activity with an awareness of each movement you make produces a slowing down of your internal physiology and promotes relaxation. Mindful activity creates a here-and-now present focus. It directs all of your attention to the events of the moment. You can use this attention focus as a thought-changing strategy. It takes you away from excited or negative thoughts of the future or past and places you totally in the present moment, here and now. Use the relaxation strategies during this procedure. World-class athletes experience a number of mental characteristics in common during their best performances. One of these characteristics is a 100% focus in the present. On the course, feel the back of your golf shoes as you slip them on one at a time. Look at the colors, hear the sounds, and experience the smells of your environment. Feel the texture of your golf balls and tees as you remove them from your golf bag. Note what your golf glove feels like as you slip it slowly and deliberately on your hand. Experience the feeling of your club head as you remove the club from your bag. Be in the present. Be mindful. As you move from course management to club selection, your concentration should become more and more narrow. It's like walking through a funnel of concentration, where you start with a broad focus and move progressively to a narrow focus. As you approach your setup to the ball, the more narrow your focus becomes. After you hit the shot, you return to a broad focus of positive, casual conversation or thoughts about the landscape. As you approach your ball on the next shot, your focus should begin to narrow again as you start your course management. Some degree of mental arousal is important for concentration. Fine-tuning your level of desired arousal is a goal. The window for success is relatively small. It's a matter of knowing how to quiet thought and physiology while at the same time directing all of your senses into the present. Practice off-course concentration. How often is your body in the present, but your mind is on the events of the last hour, week, or year, or your thoughts are anticipating the events of tomorrow, next week, or next month? At these times, you put your body and mind on full automatic and go about your day as a robot. Mindfulness will take you out of this automatic behavior pattern and place you in the present. How often have you heard people talk about requiring 2 or 3 days of vacation before they can really relax? That's like sending your body on vacation to the countryside with your mind still in the city. Repeated practice of mindfulness with vacation activity will put your mind with your body and you will experience increased relaxation and a feeling of control. You don't have to wait for a vacation to practice being mindful. Try starting in the morning when you awaken and use it on your way to work, as you do errands, or as you work. You will note a positive impact in whatever you do, work or play. Consistent and persistent practice is necessary for success. Remember, you have taken a lifetime to arrive at your present habits. Change will be gradual and in small steps. It is upon these small steps that you will build major gains. If you are someone who demands immediate results or is looking for a quick cure, you won't find it here. These strategies require planned, hard work to impact upon the neuroanatomical and neurochemical structure of your nervous system. The neural circuitry of your brain will continue to fire in the same sequence unless you change the network through daily practice over several days. How long is several days? There's no set number. No, it doesn't take 21 days. It takes as long as necessary to change the neuroanatomical and neurochemical structure of the brain. The time to change is dependent on a number of variables. How long, how frequently, and in what conditions did the old habit occur? And how frequently and under what conditions will you practice the new habit? Building quiet movement and mindfulness into a daily routine will provide you with practice with this strategy. This practice will start your day in a more relaxed fashion and give you well-practiced thought-changing and relaxation strategies you can draw upon as needed. Remember, your present thinking habits are encoded in the neural circuitry of your brain and are triggered by your environmental events. If you choose to change these habits, either on or off the course, set goals and times to practice the alternative habits. Neuroanatomical changes will occur only with extended, repeated practice in a variety of situations. The chapter, Lift, Clean, and Place, provides hypothetical situations and a recommended structure to begin change. Visualization. A recent research study had a group of people perform physical movement while the parts of their brain involved in the movement were mapped. These same people visualized the physical movement they had performed. Interestingly, the same parts of the brain showed activity with both physical and visualized movement, with the exception of the motor cortex. that part of the brain responsible for initiating physical movement. This study shows that visualized movement creates a firing in the neural circuitry of the brain that prepares the nervous system to perform the visualized behavior. The visualization process is an integral part of constructing the motor program. The brain scans from this study appear in the chapter titled Visualization. Recall that neuroscientists have found that it takes 1.5 seconds for the brain to construct a motor program and just 0.1 second to reinitiate movement. This 1.5 second period is called the readiness potential. The brain takes 15 times longer to plan movement than it does to initiate it. Visualization helps formulate the motor plan and establish a target for the behavior. Thus far, we have discussed quieting the nervous system through breathing, movement, and focusing attention through mindfulness. Practicing positive visualization can produce a present focus, increase relaxation and confidence, and prepare the nervous system for peak performance. Conversely, negative visualization, that's out of hazards, out of bounds, conflict, and so on, will create arousal, decrease confidence, and prepare the nervous system for poor performance. The chapter, Visualization, details the use of this important strategy for improving performance by drawing upon images of past success, increasing confidence, increasing relaxation, developing a present focus, and lighting up the appropriate areas of the brain for success. Routine. The first chapter of this book covered routine in great detail. I am not going to elaborate except to note that a set routine will establish a structure of links and a mental and physical chain that provides a barrier for distraction and associated lapses in physical and mental routines. This mental focus blocks intrusive, tension-producing thoughts and facilitates relaxation. Stretching. When Ray Floyd turned 50 years of age, he was asked what kind of exercise program he used. He said he had done nothing but a stretching program for 20 to 25 minutes a day. When the body is in an aroused state, muscle tension is one characteristic of the chain of physical events. Stretching exercises produce an elongation and relaxation of these tense muscles. Arousal is not the only cause of tense muscles. A prolonged posture of sitting, standing, or reclining can also cause tension. As we age and are less physically active, muscle tension accumulates much more readily. The golf swing requires a flexible muscular system. Without flexibility, your joints can't reach their full range of motion, and you won't experience your maximum performance capabilities. Older players will notice that they play better and hit longer shots as a round progresses, especially in warm weather. This is often due to the increased muscular flexibility and relaxation that comes with the heat and continuous play. I'm not going to fill the pages of this book with pictures and instructions for a stretching program. There are some excellent resources available. Please look in the reference section for the following: Bob Anderson, Stretching; Frank Jobe, 30 Exercises for Better Golf; and Pete Egoscue, The Egoscue Method of Health Through Motion. Posture. When you are happy, positive, and relaxed, you walk with your shoulders back, your head erect, and a smile on your face. When you are down and depressed, your shoulders are forward, your head is down, and you are not smiling, and even perhaps frowning. You can affect your mood and attitude by changing your posture. Assume an as-if posture. Behave as if you just hit the shot of your life, and you are on your way to more success. Put your shoulders back with your head high. Never let your eyes drop below the horizon. Practice deep diaphragmatic breathing and body scans as you move around the course and your ball. Your internal mood and physical state will begin to assume the same style as your external posture. This as-if style of behaving was first used as a clinical treatment by Alfred Adler, a Viennese psychiatrist, in the late 1800s and early 1900s. Adler had his patients act as if they were the person they wanted to be. It is an extremely effective therapeutic style. Try it. You won't be disappointed. Note both the mood and performance changes that occur. Research shows that there is a change in physiology that matches postural changes. An anxious or angry posture produces an acceleration in nervous system activity. A relaxed, calm posture produces a deceleration of nervous system activity. Biofeedback. Biofeedback is a clinical procedure that was first used by psychologists in the late 1960s and early 1970s. A good bit of the early research centered on yoga and meditation practitioners who could alter their physiological state. Biofeedback is a procedure where biological information is picked up through surface electrodes and converted to information that is fed back to a person through audio or video signals. This knowledge of results enables a person to voluntarily induce a more relaxed state. A comprehensive biofeedback evaluation will establish your baseline levels of arousal. The other strategies listed here are practiced for 5 or 6 weeks. At the end of this practice period, the biofeedback evaluation is repeated. A comparison of the two evaluations will show the effects of the practice of the other strategies on your generalized arousal level. Anyone can learn to relax in a darkened room seated in a recliner while being provided with feedback regarding muscle tension or skin temperature. The real test is staying relaxed throughout the day, at home, at work, on the course, or out socially. Confidence. The feeling of control is at the heart of both arousal and relaxation. Control brings us full circle back to the word confidence. When we are confident, we are in control and relaxed. When we are tentative, apprehensive, second-guessing, or fearful, we are not in control and we become tense. Jack Nicklaus describes the number one tension reliever for anyone in golf as confidence. If you know you can hit a shot, you will have a relaxed swing. He says the second biggest tension reliever is concentrating. Focusing on your routine, describing your shot, quieting your thinking and your movement, and images of success are examples of this. Many great players are different from the rest of the field in their belief that, and I quote, nobody is better and nearly all inferior, end quote. This style of thinking will definitely quiet the nervous system of the over-aroused player. Anything you attempt with that kind of confidence, you do relaxed. I am not going to elaborate further on confidence here. It is the topic of a later chapter. The nervous system consists of billions of neurons. Our day-to-day experiences cause these neurons to communicate at lightning speed. The pathways of these neurons fall into a pattern circuitry, and they are triggered by conditions in the environment. We call these patterns learning. Your level of arousal across a variety of conditions tends to follow a predictable set style. If you are going to change the neural circuitry that leads to arousal, you will have to practice the corrective strategies both on and off the course, and in both low and high arousal states. For example, you should be practicing deep diaphragmatic breathing, quieted movement, positive visualization, focused thinking or mindfulness, and a confident internal dialogue throughout your day. These strategies require some form of guided practice instruction. Guided practice is instruction that provides step-by-step guidelines for learning. Repeated practice produces neuroanatomical and behavioral changes that result in improved performance. The Mind Under Par series routine, guided practice in developing consistent performance, provides instruction in all the areas listed, except biofeedback and stretching.
This is the end of this cassette. Please proceed to the next cassette.
Chapter